You're listening to NPR.
There are now 8 movies in the Fast and Furious franchise, plus a spinoff of the series called Hobbs and Shaw that was just released and made $180 million globally in its opening weekend. And 3 of the core actors in these movies, Vin Diesel.
You got the best crew in the world standing right in front of you.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
When it's the fate of the world, it becomes my business.
And Jason Statham.
What's this? You might learn something.
Play characters who fight not just bad guys, but also each other at different points in the movies. And these actors do not like it when their characters lose fights, or even when they absorb more punches than they throw. They dislike it so much that all 3 of them have taken steps to make sure that the fights on screen are never lopsided against their characters. One of the actors even negotiated an agreement with the studio that his character not get beaten up too much. So what is going on? Are these actors just protecting their fragile masculine egos, or are there rational reasons for guarding their tough guy brands? This was all revealed in a great Wall Street Journal article by reporter Eric Schwartzel. This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Cardiff Garcia. Today on the show, a chat with Eric Schwartzel about tough guy branding in the Fast and Furious movies, how it affects the film business, and what you see on the screen.
Get in the car.
We're all going.
No, you.
I said,
we're all going.
Oh, come on.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Fundrise, the future of real estate investing. Access private market real estate projects from high-rises in D.C. to multifamily apartments in L.A. Get your first 3 months of fees waived at fundrise.com/indicator.
What exactly have the actors in the Fast and Furious franchise movies done to make sure that they don't lose fights or that they don't get beaten up too badly in the series?
Well, there's a whole system in place. So some of it is pretty deliberate, right? So when Jason Statham signed on to join the franchise, he secured an agreement that there would be certain stipulations about what would happen to his character on screen. He wouldn't spend the whole movie getting pummeled, right? He wouldn't, you know, lose fight after fight after fight. He wouldn't have to kill a woman or a child on screen. So that was kind of like some very deliberate image maintenance. Other forms of that kind of maintenance emerge over time, right? So as the actors have grown more powerful, obviously they have teams and entourages who help maintain that image. And so, for instance, Vin Diesel's sister, who is a producer on the films, she is essentially a surrogate for her brother on the set. And so she will go to fight rehearsals and say, hey, I noticed, you know, Vin's getting, you know, quite a few kicks here. Like, is he going to be able to fight back in an equal way? Just to make sure that it doesn't look like her brother is, you know, looking like a wimp on screen.
Is losing out to the other alpha males on the show.
Right, right, right. And so they have to choreograph the fights in a way that makes sure that each actor gets his due or gets his moment. And then while they're filming, obviously, there are those considerations. And then after filming, when they're doing the editing, sometimes the actors will sit in on the scenes and make sure that they are pleased with how they're portrayed. So it's like almost every, I mean, these movies now are on their 9th installment, and so these actors are hugely powerful and hugely famous for being tough guys. So there's a bit of an apparatus of image maintenance that's kind of infiltrated the entire filmmaking process.
Yeah, and you write in your piece that in Hollywood, sheltering the tender egos of action stars is increasingly a cost of doing business. And I'm especially interested in the cost of doing business part. I mean, are there monetary stakes in doing this?
I think that is the insecurity, yes. I mean, the Fast and Furious franchise is really an indicator of how Hollywood works today, right? These movies cost in excess of $150 million to produce, which means they have to be hits everywhere to turn a profit. They have to work around the world. Also, at the same time, you're seeing the movie star in Hollywood in general is just not what it once was. We really are sort of past the era of Jim Carrey or Julia Roberts, these kind of big name stars who could carry a movie themselves. So it's really become more about the property than the actors. But the Fast and Furious franchise really is tied to this kind of core set of tough guys, Jason Statham, Vin Diesel, and Dwayne Johnson. And because there are 3 of them in one property, that has really contributed to the arms race, right? What happens when they have to fight one another? It has to kind of reach a stasis. Like, no one can emerge looking tougher than the other.
Yeah, there's something else about this that's at least a little bit surprising, which is that actors and actresses are famously proud, usually, of their range, of the ability to play characters who are not at all like them. And here you have an example of three actors who are deliberately imposing limits on their own range. They're essentially putting all their chips on this one brand that they have rather than being willing to explore a little bit of vulnerability or loss.
Well, I don't know many casting agents in Hollywood who are looking for, you know, the Vin Diesel chamber drama, but I think that there is a spectrum to what you're describing, right? Where Vin Diesel is definitely most closely associated with the Fast and Furious franchise. A lot of the work that he's done outside the franchise has not caught on with audiences. Jason Statham, I think, is somewhere in the middle. He definitely will often portray a tough guy. You see him in movies like the Killer Shark movie, The Meg. Dwayne Johnson probably has the broadest range of the three, right? He's in Jumanji. He's in movies like The Tooth Fairy. He'll do more comedy and so on. So I think that there is a bit of a spectrum, but you're right. I think, you know, a lot of these actors are globally famous, and they're globally famous for one kind of persona.
One thing that also kind of struck me about this is that it made me wonder whether or not the people who played the villains are likely to be, if not better actors, maybe rangier actors, or at least actors who are willing to go to more places. I mean, in the case of the last movie, Hobbs and Shaw, the villain is played by Idris Elba, who can play a tough guy for sure, and he has, but who is also an exceptional character actor as well. Do you think there's anything to that?
Yeah, I do, actually. There's this axiom in Hollywood that your movie is only as good as your villain. And if you look back, actually, the example that was given to me to explain that was the Disney movies of the 90s, where you have like Jafar in Aladdin and Ursula in The Little Mermaid, and you have these really excellent villains, just like sort of complex and fascinating characters. They kind of elevate the whole story. You know, in the Fast and Furious movies, this is not going to be a place to come and, like a James Bond movie, maybe see sort of like a socially relevant villain that introduces some kind of current event or theme there. This is going to be more kind of cartoonish, outlandish, like free-for-all.
One other thing. You mentioned James Bond earlier.
Yes.
And it seems to me, though, like in the current iteration of James Bond, the Daniel Craig James Bond, they made him a sort of fleshed out character, whereas kind of earlier iterations of James Bond had like the very smooth talking, always confident Sean Connery, Roger Moore types. And with Craig, they made him lose again and again and again. He lost the love of his life. He was a broken man. He was damaged. And I guess I'm wondering if the Fast and Furious franchise is kind of a throwback, or if it's kind of standing alone. Like, it's actually in some ways an exception rather than the rule to have these characters that always follow a very similar trajectory, never show any weakness, always win or at least survive in the end. What do you sort of think of its place in like the universe of like summer blockbuster hero versus villain type movies?
Yeah, you raise a really great point, because it is counter-programming in a way, because we have seen this trend toward more psychologically complicated heroes, or at least protagonists, right? And I think you could also put like Tony Soprano or Walter White on Breaking Bad in that world too, where you have these characters who we see are capable of terrible things, and yet who also have circumstances in which we will root for them. And so we kind of have complicated the villain or the anti-hero in that case. And so I think you're right. I mean, I think there is certainly still an audience that's like, look, I can go to the movies and not necessarily need to like have some Freudian psychology thrust at me in every film and with every character. And so, yeah, I think the Fast and Furious movies, they know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly where they are. I don't think that that audiences are paying to see, you know, like, oh, did Vin Diesel's character like not get hugged by his dad enough?
Eric Schwartzel, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
This podcast was produced by Darius Rafieyan, edited by Patty Hirsch, and fact-checked by Emily Lang. The Indicator is a production of NPR.